Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday, at 11 o'clock, and we discuss different topics about education, about just the world, anything that will influence us, our families, our communities, what will help us be the people we want to be in the world we want to live in, and how do we do that? Today, we're going to talk about academics and education and a very, very cool topic. I think the world divides into two people, people that love math and people that, I'm not going to say what about math. And in the discussion of math, there's always a discussion of math core, math lit, the differences. I've had here on the show business owners and people that are that manage finances that said, it was years ago, that they actually send their kids to matric to do both. Even though they could do math core, they want them to have math lit for the literacy and financial understanding. So it's a very interesting topic, and I think we need to understand more about math and math core, math lit, etc. For that, I'm going to introduce our guest today, who we are going to have on the show, who I guess know math and know math very well. So firstly, I'm going to say good morning to the guest who works in the public schools, in the public system, underprivileged kids, so she knows everything about math and when it's difficult. Her name is Celeste Boritz, and she's a math teacher and head of FET Phase National at an organization that supports learners. Good morning. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Okay. So are you a math fan?
I'm a devoted maths fan.
Okay.
But it never came naturally. I put my chips in, and the more I put my chips in, the more it happened for me.
Okay, amazing. So when you were in school, you weren't like, what's your best topic or favorite topic? Math. That wasn't you.
It developed.
Okay, so that can happen. Let's introduce our second guest today. Good morning to Hannah, who is a speech therapist, and you work in private practice and at CORE, the Autism School Development Center, etc. A bit about you.
Hi there, Rabbi. It's actually CARE.
And I said?
CORE.
It's CARE. You're right.
Yes, another good school is CORE.
Yeah.
So I work with supporting learners, neurodiverse learners, with the academic concepts. Because I'm school-based, I work very closely with teachers and curriculum development to specialize and create IEPs that help the learners access the curriculum to the best of their ability. And in private, I work with learners who are already in mainstream, who need to access quite a standardized curriculum, and I would support how do we maximize the curriculum for those learners who are neurodiverse, who operate just a little bit differently.
Okay, and you're into math?
I'm not mathematically inclined myself, but that might just be a bad attitude.
So let's
say that
by the end of the show that will be different.
Yes.
So let's see.
Yeah, possible.
So let's, in a nutshell, math core, math lit, a bit about it, the differences, etc.
In a nutshell, if you have had the privilege of being at a good school, you should, if you are taught well, you should be developing on the mathematical route. But there's no shame if you have to change to maths lit. There is such a thing called changing to maths lit because it is.
What is it? Before we go
okay,
to the change.
So you may be able to change to math lit at, say, the grade 10 stage because you really, for various reasons, are not coping with mathematics. If you have really persevered and you and your parents think that it is the right thing for you, it is okay to change, to change to math lit. Math lit is more like a practical approach to solving everyday problems, you could say. Very English-based, which is a bit of a problem with the actual subject, but it does honestly land up being an easier option for children who really have this mathematical stress around mathematics.
So you're saying MathLit is a language-based math curriculum that is very practical?
Yes.
And what more the method that we would use throughout life for whatever we need?
Yes.
Etc. And MathCore?
MathCore is more, it is also to do with life because you are developing your cognitive abilities and you're developing problem solving. And it's an amazing skill.
Okay.
How it's taught is how you perceive your abilities to be, and our parents' attitude towards us with our maths and our own attitude towards our maths is such an influence. But it's a beautiful subject, but it needs to not be so highly stressed. I mean, so highly stressful. And a lot of children can't get away from that stressful feeling. And we, Hannah and I were just discussing earlier that often for the higher levels, it's a time thing. There's a time constraint on your exams, and it becomes a big stressful situation.
Beyond time. Time is for every subject. But in math, they want to know how we got to the conclusion. It's not enough to have the right answer. If you do an English test and you get the right answer, great. If you're doing an exam in history, you get the right answer, that's fine. In math, you're expected to show on paper how you got to the conclusion. And if potentially you got it in the wrong way, that will take away from your mark.
Yes, it's quite complicated, yes.
And that's the only subject that we have that today. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. I mean, I suppose it depends on what route you... Maybe. What about science, though? You know, physics.
To a point.
So, this is off my scope of professional practice, just my experience being at school. Science, they wanted you to use very specific formula, and you had to memorize and apply it as per the question. So if you used... perhaps a different formula, but you could justify your work. Perhaps the teacher themselves would award you a mark, but that can be quite variable. Mm. So you also, at some point, have to learn how to answer questions to get the right mark rather than to get the right answer. Does that make sense? Which,
right.
If I can link it back to autism, who are very logical, real world, concrete, they wouldn't understand that. They're like, I've got the right answer. Why should I show my reasoning? So... that can actually be a bit of a fallout sometimes as well.
Right, and it actually makes sense what they're saying. The only reason that potentially you would need the reasoning, from what I'm understanding from Celeste, is because it's to teach you critical thinking. Yet we are living in a world, and this is where I'll ask Hannah, we're living in a world that we are shifting from strict academics to allowing kids to be creative and allowing kids to have a exploring their academics and exploring and understanding the world. And we speak a lot about the concern that when a toddler is born and they are exploring the world and trying and testing, and often say they start walking, they fall so many times and they still get up and try again. And they have this creativity. Yet eventually in our schooling, we kind of shove them in a box and eventually tell them what's right and wrong. And while the school system is shifting in that regard and is saying we're more open to other options, to understanding that we want to give the kids to continue with their creativity and with their inner self, in math, we're not allowing that.
No, that's not true.
Okay,
we have a certain amount of course, we have creativity when we problem solve.
Okay.
And like English, there are certain constraints in the subject, especially at school level, but you are certainly allowed to explore and be creative in maths. And a good teacher will always mark your method if you've done something in a certain way. I see maths as a fundamental basic to opening up your mind to other subjects, and you can certainly be flexible and outward thinking towards other careers, etc. But I see it as one of the basics, like English or like a language, like your home language.
Right.
To further cognitive development. But as we say, it's not the only option.
So where does the creativity come in math core?
Oh, the problem solving. I mean, you can even be given an exponential equation, and you'll have to say, well, I can rely on what I've known from the past, but what can I now apply? So there's creativity in almost every topic. No, in every topic there's creativity. In every way to solve things. Problem solving is creative thinking. It's not just a past paper thing that you can just work on. You can't be blind.
No, it's definitely creative thinking,
yeah.
Yet it does come with a strong right and wrong rules, which
It does, but it does allow creativity.
Okay.
To get to that answer, you know, it does allow creativity.
Okay.
Even if it's an open-ended answer.
So we do get that.
Yeah.
So then, Hannah, you raised a moment ago the autism. And spectrum. I'm going to ask you a question, but you're going to have to answer it after the break because we do need to take an ad break. The question is as follows. When we talk about kids on the spectrum, right, that their learning per se is very factual based and is not necessarily language based. And Celeste is speaking about language of math and the language of understanding concepts. For instance, we automatically have the language of what numbers are more and what numbers are less and what number and our timetables. And when we have a child who doesn't develop with language appropriately or fast enough or even in the same path, how do we introduce the math language as another language that the child needs to address, which comes with a lot of complications, which we could speak after the break. I'll leave you with a question, and when we come back, you'll answer that. I'm here in a very important discussion about math, math core, math lits, in neurodiverse, in neurotypical, underprivileged, etc., with two professionals in the field. I'm here with Celeste Boritz, who is a math teacher and head of FET at FASE National, and as well as Hannah, that is a speech therapist and working with kids that are neurodiverse. Short break, and we will be right back.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we are discussing a very important topic, which is math and the journey of math in different aspects, as well as math core, math lit, etc., and different aspects of life of neurodiverse and neurotypical, as well as underprivileged, etc. Right before the break, I actually asked Hannah, who is a speech therapist and working with kids that are neurodiverse, I asked her, how do we take math concepts that are a language of thinking and with many concepts that are a given, and work with kids on the spectrum that are very concrete, not as developed in their language. Many times we'll refer to words as an actual thing when numbers is not an actual thing, right? We use numbers for counting. We use numbers for identifying. We use numbers for order. We don't use it as three. Number three means nothing. It could mean three things. It could mean bigger than two. It could mean identification, but it doesn't have its own meaning. So how do you do it?
Thanks, Rabbi. I think you have to really look at the child as an individual. So obviously with our learners, yes, we can say learners on the spectrum tend to struggle more with language. However, that's not necessarily true of all the learners. So
okay, but let's talk about the ones that do.
So the ones that do struggle with language, you want to use language that is tangible. So if you think of a word problem, try not to refer to a social situation that is also unlikely to happen because of weak theory of mind, so not understanding the perspectives of others. And children on the spectrum really struggle to see past that. Another thing that they struggle with is the weak central coherence. So weak central coherence is an issue they face where they can't see the forest from the trees. They're very detail-oriented, but can't see the bigger picture. So if you think of a word problem, you have to kind of follow a train of thought so that the bigger picture is quite clear.
Correct.
So try not to use silly or illogical things like, Sally had 24 apples. When is that ever going to happen? It might confuse and dysregulate the child. So you're already setting them up for failure. Another thing you want to look at is, it's a concept called like errorless teaching, where you set up the worksheet in such a visually organized way that the child is not trying to work on their spatial organization and their cognitive processing and when you're trying to solve a specific problem, let's say long division. You want to focus on what you're working on with the child and remove the other issues that would be a battle for them. So
laser focused on the academics. I get
yes,
that.
Yes.
But then what would you look at for a child that is struggling with the language, math core, math list?
So again, very child specific. On one hand, the math lit and the language around it is very easy to apply in real life. So when you give an example to the child for a math lit concept, you can already show them the real life application, which might be, even though there's more language, there's also more real life example. So that is tangible, that is concrete. This is about money. This is about
taxes. I was going to go to money because that's the most important area where they need to manage functionally.
But you don't want to assume, because a child has a diagnosis of either autism, ADHD, dyslexia, that they cannot do core maths. Because when you don't take core maths, you do close a few doors, especially in STEM. And if you think about some of our learners,
what are the doors we're closing?
So STEM is science, technology, engineering and and I think it's a maths or medicine.
Maths.
I was always confused maths and medicine. Yeah. And those require core maths as a subject that you need to take. So if you take maths lit, that means you have an array of subject choices for university, but it's a bit less. So this is, I think, where the stigma comes in, and we have to look at it. What is best for the child, not for what the community perceives as a good professional degree or whether you're perceived as a smart person. You can be successful with maths lit and you can be successful with core maths. But again, just because a child's neurodiverse does not mean we're closing the door.
100%. And as we say often, right, if you've seen one child on the spectrum, you've seen one child on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rules and there's no groups, and I'm with you in that 100%. So those doors that are closed, they're closed because of the critical thinking and because that's how we view it, or like, are these closing doors really justified, meaning the child will be actually missing out? I'm going to ask Celeste about that. Or is it a bit of the way we think and we're stuck there?
You do need core maths for university degrees that are inclined towards the sciences, the engineering,
computer science,
but not all tech, of course. But there are requirements at uni that say that you actually have to have maths as a basic start, because it also indicates to them if you're on that line of thinking.
Okay.
So the thing is that you cannot worry about the community and your choices as a family for your child. You absolutely have to put all the systems in place, in my opinion, to encourage your child to do their best and in maths as they're going along. And then you have to be realistic, and you have to sit with your child and say, as long as you put all your systems in place to help your child to handle mathematics, and you know that you've done your best, if you feel at some stage your child feels that this is time to move to maths lit, it's absolutely okay. I don't propose the project system where you're doing both, because it's such hard work in matric as it is with all the pressure. So I don't propose that system, but a lot of schools in our community do propose that.
Right. But when we talk about underprivileged schools in that area, are both of them provided? They're both options?
Yes, both are provided. Unfortunately, too many children change to maths lit. And I'll say that unfortunately.
Why unfortunately?
Because they have not been taught well. They have not been given the foundation. And that's what our country is trying to build. We're trying to rebuild the foundation, so that learners have got opportunities, children have got opportunities to develop in whichever way they want. And it's a bit of a crisis. We are trying so hard. There are so many organizations. I work for Olico Maths Education, and I'm at the tail end of the 10, 11, 12, but there are a lot of systems that have been put in place in this afternoon program and sometimes in the primary schools to improve this. Because the children honestly are disadvantaged.
But are we fighting the right battle? Because let me ask you, when we look into some schools, some places, and we see classes with not enough chairs, and we see huge amounts of students that they could barely learn, and their parents are so busy trying to make a living and so busy trying to function, because we are very blessed and very privileged, and we need to realize that there are people that aren't. Is the approach of trying to give them a better opportunity by teaching them as much as we can and giving them as much options, not risking that it will just become too much and we're going to lose them, instead of taking an easier route, more practical, more realistic, more their language of how to make money, how to work, how to get in life, how to take responsibility over yourself. And maybe they won't be as advanced in certain areas, but they will be much more functional in that regard of not giving up and just moving on.
No, because actually those children deserve these choices. They deserve the choice between maths and maths lit, and they need to make the choice as if they had all the education, but a lot of them haven't.
Yeah, but you're saying they don't deserve that choice because you're saying it's a crisis that they're choosing maths lit. We should fight that, and I'm asking why.
Because many children's bursaries, etc., are based on the maths route, and those children have the capability, but they haven't been given the opportunity. So we need to fix up the classrooms, fix up how many learner ratio, teacher ratio there are, and we have to address those issues. But we still, the children deserve to make their own choices. As if you were in a privileged setting, But we're not right there. We're not. Most children are choosing Maths Lit because they honestly have not got the foundation. And it is a disadvantage because you can choose many vocational skills with Maths Lit, but you're also disadvantaged if you don't have maths. So it's should be a deeply individual choice.
Right.
But so much of it is foisted onto children because there's no option.
And it's foisted a lot of it because of the reality.
The reality is not fair.
Right.
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
But then how do we fit into reality?
We fit into reality by continuously, and there are so many pockets of these organizations, by continuously trying to build and to help children make sense of numbers, make sense of numeracy, to make sense, and then they start to develop.
Okay. So let me ask you, going back to our community.
Yes.
Okay. Let's
yes.
say a child is struggling with math, having a hard time, and their parent is sitting there debating, really, should I encourage my child to turn over to Math Lit? Should I just push them with 2 hours of tutoring a day? Should I drain them? What are the guidelines, very rough guidelines, that you would say in choosing a curriculum?
So I would definitely support the parents if they chose to help their child to choose Math Lit. Because
that's after the choice. I'm asking a parent that's listening in is before the choice.
Before the choice?
Yes. How do they make a decision?
They need to help their child to decide if their child is doing enough work at home. When they are given a little bit of homework, are they doing it? What's happening in school? Have they had the teacher support? Is it possible for them to go to, say, one of the organizations twice a week for a little bit of extra help? Because children mature. As they're maturing, sometimes their numbers switch and their thoughts start switching and developing. So if the parents feel that they have made every effort, and the child, then I would advise that person to move to Math, the child to move to Math Lit, because if it's dominating their lives and they're miserable and they're very unhappy and they know they're not going to choose anything that will impact, that their choices won't impact their future choices, then there's just no problem at all.
Then don't push. Hannah?
Yeah.
You moved from, you know, the underprivileged community to our community. Oh. If you do have the opportunity to seek an educational psychologist, maybe in the earlier phases, those assessments are so enlightening on how your brain works and what the actual area of difficulty is. And that intervention, before you make your decision in grade 9 or 10 to change to Math Lit, if you have that intervention and you actually understand where my weaknesses are, that might be that support you need. You know, if maths is not really clocking it, do you have dyscalculia? Do you have dysgraphia? Do you have dyslexia? What can we do to intervene it so that it's not just okay, you can't do maths, do Math Lit. It's a reductive kind of discussion. It lacks depth. You know, all our brains have different ways of processing information and different intrigues. And if you, again, go back to the neurodiverse learners, it's saying someone has autism is such a blanket statement. We know their brains work so uniquely and differently. How can we maximize on that to the best of their ability?
Now, how would you get the knowledge? Because, you know, I was going to ask you right now, and you brought it up. I'm wondering if me and you walk down to the parking lot over here right now, and we stop 10 people on the street and say, do you know what dyslexia is?
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing 10 people out of 10 would say yes. And then I'll ask them, do you know what dyscalculia is? All right. What do you say? 5? 4?
Less.
3?
Yeah.
Okay. That's our failure as educators, as teachers, as therapists. Why? Well, how come people don't know about it and we're not able to identify it at a younger age to send them for professional help?
I mean, I could go into it. It's a whole lot of complexities. I wish there were more educational psychologists qualified. So it's incredibly hard to qualify as an educational psychologist, hard to get into the master's clinical psychology program and study further. So we have very few available. And they're not always present in the schooling system. So then we have to look at the therapists. There's often an occupational therapist at most schools. How can they promote themselves, what they do, and explain things better to that community, and then we have a trickle-down effect. I think the advent of social media is actually great. It's you know, it's two-pronged, you know, but
one second, yeah. I'm going to stop in that because I don't think we have a lack of educational psychologists. I know endless of them. Yes, they're busy, but the way the financial structure is through medical aid or private is that it's unrealistic for many, many, many South Africans to access them. I could... introduce you to tens and probably hundreds of educational psychologists. The problem really resides is how do we make this practical? Now, most kids that go to educational psychologists is because the teacher and the school called the parents in and said, hey, I think your child needs an assessment, right? But if we don't have 10 out of 10 teachers knowing what dyscalculia is, then these kids are not going to be referred to the therapist. So where are we going wrong? How did dyslexia get such a great publicity, and yet dyscalculia or dysgraphia doesn't have so much PR?
I mean, that is actually quite interesting. I think, you know, we've got a lot of famous people, Jamie Oliver, for example, who has dyslexia, and that allows it to be wider known. But it's also a failure on our part to, when we diagnose a child, we don't specify what's going on with them, and then it doesn't go out in the modern common language. We don't say someone has sensory processing disorder and they have dyslexia and they have dysgraphia, and we just say, you know, they have autism and they struggle with these things, and we don't use that terminology enough. I would say even in my profession, I think we worry the parents won't understand us, so we don't use the proper terminology, and then we create a sulk ourselves, because it's our responsibility as professionals to impart that language. But also, as you say, it's not common.
It's not common knowledge.
It's not common knowledge. You're right. Thanks for clarifying that. It's not common knowledge. You're absolutely right. It's people off the top of the head won't be able to determine that. But there was a time when dyslexia wasn't common knowledge, and now it's
right. And also sensory, as you said, and sensory has become popular. Yeah. So we have sensory, we have spectrum, we have dyslexia, but there's so much more. And there's so many people lacking theory of mind that are not on the spectrum. And there's so many people that are potentially sensory that are not on the spectrum. And there's so many people that have some symptoms and some difficulties. It's like in professional capacity, sometimes we could say, well, what do you want your child to have? Because if you want them to have PDA, then we'll send them to England for an evaluation. If you want them to have autism, we'll keep them in South Africa. If you want them to have sensory integration, we'll send them to Australia. Now, that's in a way where a lot of the, I'm not saying any of the therapists are wrong. I'm saying that we have highlights on different areas and we get onto that. So in the name of the knowledge that we need our teachers to have and our schools to have and our parents to have, it's kind of getting lost within the popular knowns, and the specifics are disappearing.
Absolutely. So a lot of things are trending, and then when a term becomes trending, you want your child to be that terminology because you've seen it. Like I said, the two-pronged thing with social media. Social media brings awareness, but it also can bring misleading information and confusion. So tackling that has always been an interesting journey for me. I recommend Instagram pages to parents to help them see what these terms are, how other people are dealing with these things. But then I ask them to please think critically and send that back to me if they're seeing stuff on TikTok or whatever that is sometimes harmful. It can upset the parents because it's makes them feel bad or makes them confused. But you're right, there's a lot of different therapeutic approaches that are highlighted in South Africa, Australia, or UK, as you said.
Okay. Is any of this vocabulary that me and Hannah are speaking about common knowledge for teachers and families in the underprivileged schools?
Definitely not.
Okay.
I don't think so at all. Because I've even seen children with ADD in a particular afternoon session, and I can see that they've got a total crisis. They cannot concentrate. But I promise you they have not been helped. No one even identifies it. I've told some of the young people who work for us to keep an eye on him because I think he needs some help, etc., you know, on that. But I'm also not so skilled at that, you know, at picking it up.
So then we need to see it, and we'll talk after the break. We do need to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll discuss that more. How can organizations like yours integrate much more knowledge around the neurodiversity and not only invest in pure academics, because sometimes you're putting the energy in the, I don't want to say incorrect place, but it's not being channeled perfectly. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll discuss that exactly.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are talking in a very interesting discussion about something that many people would consider a very boring topic. We are talking about math, and I'm sorry for the math lovers, I'm sure it's not boring for you. However, in the discussion about Math Lit and Math Core, etc., right before the break, I asked Celeste, who is a teacher and head of FET in FES National for underprivileged schools, about the awareness in the public schools, and maybe not even in the underprivileged, just in the public schools, about neurodiverse, about different challenges, about learning accommodations that are needed, about being aware of what the challenges can come from or are from. And you mentioned that not really, that it's not known and it's not seen.
In our afternoon program, we have learners who elect to come to us for lessons in the afternoon. I mean, I've just said that. So they would probably be okay learning-wise. So imagine that there might be 60 in a matric class. Imagine who's been neglected. So that's the problem. And I think there's a lack of education about different neurodivergence, etc. I think we could all do with a better education. So I am a great maths teacher, I think, and I'm a great maths educator. I'm passionate about my work. But I think I could also do well to learn more about what you're talking about today, Hannah.
Yeah, but I mean, Celeste, I wish you were my math teacher. Kind of might have had a better attitude towards math.
Can I just ask you specifically, you know, when you talk about the numbers, from the kids that come to you, how many kids do you have from one class?
Well, in a school, in one of the a township school, we might get about 36 kids, say, coming for a matric lesson.
From the same class?
No, different classes.
No, so from one average. Like, how many kids in the group would you say, these two are from the same class, these five are from the same class?
It's a mix. In a school like Alex High, there would be a lot of matric classes.
Okay.
So it's a mix.
Because the reason I'm asking is because if you have five kids in a group from the same class, and the average size class is 60 kids, then we know that we're not doing great.
No, we're struggling. Okay. Those schools are struggling.
So we do have it. I do have a question from a listener coming in. Okay, and it's complicated on many levels, but let's hear. I'm going to give it to you to answer. My husband is furious because my granddaughter is in grade 11 and is going to stop maths and do go to math literacy. We did send her to Komon, but she then never did the homework, so we stopped it. But as I say, my hubby angry, she is stopping maths. What is your opinion?
My opinion is that it's actually between the parents and the child, not the grandparents.
I was sure you were going to go there, and I was going to say
not
that.
The bobby and the. But the parents have got to have analyzed everything with the child and know that they've, I think, that's my slight bias towards maths, exhausted every avenue to choose maths. And if they've exhausted every avenue, there is absolutely no problem with choosing Maths Lit.
Okay, so I just want to challenge what you said about the grandparents staying out of it, because here's where it gets complicated. You're right that this is between the child and the parents, and grandparents, you're there to give hugs and sweets, not to get involved. At the same time, and this is not our topic, but we're living in a reality that middle-aged people are not really coping 100% financially and independently without their parents' support.
100% true.
So the people paying often for the students' academics is the grandparents. And the people that are paying for therapy. So it's very hard to tell grandparents, stay in your line and give out sweets when they're expected to pay, they're expected to babysit, they're expected to help. So how do we balance that?
So I think then in that case, and I get you completely, the grandparents need to have a good discussion with the parents and the child and know what they are thinking. Mm. Have a family sit around and discuss it and know that the choices are anyway never cast in stone. If you do Maths Lit and you really do mature and you change your mind, let's not use the word mature, let's say you change your mind and you decide you do need core maths, you can do it after school. It's okay. So there's nothing's ever cast in stone like that.
I have a question. If you've taken, like you said, she's in grade 11, if you've chosen Maths Lit, but then you choose to try out the core Maths then exam in your matric exams.
No, you need to keep Maths going at the same time. You could you'd have to do two subjects at the same time.
Okay. And it's a stressful thing. That's why it's difficult.
Can I ask for the listener, if the specific question that came in from the listener,
yes,
and if they're interested in getting more guidance and information, can they contact
with
you?
With absolute pleasure.
Okay, so the listener who sent in that question, Corel, go ahead, message us, and if you're interested, and I will ask Celeste to be in touch or see how we can help you. One of the beautiful things that came out of this show is many times people have messaged and we've actually helped them and, find a way forward. So if you want, re-message and we'll try and help you. So your message basically, Celeste, is you're saying, think very carefully before you move from math course to math literacy. But if somebody's done it, it's fine. That's the right thing for them. Let it go and be happy and proud of your child.
Exactly.
Okay. And then be able to support them properly. The neurodiverse that we're talking about, okay? I'm not even going the route of neurodiverse underprivileged kids, okay? Because that is something that is a disaster on its own. I've had discussions with psychiatrists in the townships about it, and I've had discussions with therapists in the townships. It's complicated. It's difficult. We need to go there. Yet, what is the gap between what's the work that Celeste is doing in the public system, trying to support underprivileged kids, and the work you're doing with kids that are potentially privileged but don't have the skills that they need? Where is the overlap between both of you, and how can you work together?
I think, there's what Celeste mentioned, is the parents' education. That's actually across the board. What are the consequences of either choice? I don't think, this message from the listener, the husband's angry. Why is there anger? Why is there not discussion? Why don't we all have a round table and look at everything and include the teacher and or people who've worked with the child across many years? Maybe they know their learning style. We need to make logical decisions that are not based on emotion and stigma and perceptions that a child is lazy or things like that. So I think the gap is also, how do we teach these kids to make sure that they succeed in maths, which I think there is another overlap. When you're teaching underprivileged kids in a class of 60, it sounds impossible.
Impossible.
But if you're also teaching neurodiverse learners and you don't have yourself the education, it's very hard, you want to adapt, think on your feet, but maybe you don't have the resources, you don't have the time. We have White Paper 6, which says, we have inclusive solutions at schools, but there's actually no blueprint for the teachers. There's no how-to. So hopefully we bridge the gap through people like myself, therapists who work in this space, who offer trainings, go into schools, try and educate, but also be freely available. And by freely available, I mean literally free. This information should be free for everyone to access. No one should be paying for it.
Okay, I wish. Because another listener sends in also a question. I have a special needs daughter, age 35. She needs an assessment for her cognitive age as she needs teeth out under general anesthetic. And the medical aid will not authorize without knowing her cognitive age. Mm. Her psychiatrist wants her assessed. OT says they can't do it. And the educational psychologists seem only to deal with children. What can you suggest?
So how old is the...
35.
I find that an interesting one. So there are OTs that work with adults who have mental health
issues.
No,
she's talking about an educational psychologist that works with adults.
I'm just saying there's an OT who works with adults could bridge that gap because they would work with professionals to help who have... cognitive difficulties, whatever, as adults.
Okay, so the listener who messaged it, what I'll do for you is I will speak to the Educational Psychologist Association.
Yes.
As they've been on the show before, and we have that connection, and I will ask them who works with adults and who can support you on this journey. Just message again if you want me to do so, and I will give you information and work with that. So I guess we'll help them from that regard, and just speak to the association, and I'm sure with the thousands of educational psychologists that are on the association, one of them can work with an adult, and many more of them can. So we'll go with that. We do need to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to start wrapping up this fascinating show.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back and we're really reaching the end of a very fascinating show. I actually never believed that math could be so interesting, but I guess it is. So you live and learn. We're going to end off the show with the same question I end off with every guest I have here for probably the past 10 years. And I'm going to ask you both the same question. The question is like this, and I'm going to start with you, Celeste. What do you wish and hope that we know or do differently for a better future for our kids in South Africa?
It's a bit too broad, but
that allows you to choose whatever you want. What is your personal dream? It doesn't have to be professional. Anything you hope that will be different, that we can do different in South Africa?
There's a big difference between all different sets of schools, but I'll just say that I hope every child deserves attention and the correct level of education and the correct resources. Every child deserves it in our country, and that's what I wish for across the board.
That we learn how to give everybody the attention they need. Hannah, what do you wish and hope?
Similar to Celeste, that children are not judged before they're taught, and that they are given every opportunity before a door is closed.
Okay, to give everybody that space. And please, God, that will happen. I can just thank you for the amazing work you do, and we'll chat after the show, see what other angles we can cover and do. But just want to thank you. Firstly, Celeste Borat, who is a math teacher and head of FET Phase National in the underprivileged schools. Thank you for the amazing work you're doing, and any child you help, and you know, I could maybe in the show criticize, you know, there's not enough and not a lot of kids, but really every child you help, you've changed that child's life. So it's amazing, and keep up the good work, and thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Rabbi.
And thank you, Hannah, for being so compassionate also about special needs and in your private practice as well, and the work at CARE. Really important knowledge, and please God, you will continue that work and see how we get this gap working together. So thank you, Hannah, for being on the show. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly. Thank you, Senna, for putting the interviews in place. And thank you to our listeners that are here week after week, every Monday, with a new topic, a new discussion, and really do things that are important. And again, to the listeners who message, and if you do want that help, we will help you from the show. And in the meantime, to our listeners, stay safe. Stay tuned. There's so many other different special shows and many things to learn and enjoy on Chai FM. And we will be back next week, Monday at 11 o'clock. If you missed anything on the show, I highly recommend go to the podcast because it's really, really important stuff. Stay safe, and we will chat next week.